Hi, my name is Larry Dixon from San Diego. I heard Harriet, when he said Dixon, she said, oh, but it's okay, I don't mind, you know. My name is Larry, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm very happy today to be one, and it wasn't always like that. I come in here and I look around this room, and sometimes, I don't know what happens, but when I have an opportunity to participate in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in my own recovery, it seems that I get a little emotional, and one day I'll be able to control that, but I get a little emotional because my life is so different than the way it used to be, that it's so unbelievable. And as I look around the room, and I know that here in this room, that there's a lot of people who understand that, you know, who have blazed the trail long before I came along, or it was even thought of in some cases. But I grew up in San Diego, but I guess before I do that, I want to thank Gary for having me here, and I was hoping Lori was here. I heard that she had a little role to play in that, and I wanted to thank her too, because I believe that any time that you can do what I'm doing tonight, that it is a gift. And I want to tell you that I have this plan. I always have these wonderful plans. I'm a serious Padre fan. I mean, I love those Padres, you know. And what happened was that my son and I, my son Curtis, we've had some unbelievable things happen for us as Padre fans and as father son. We bonded in a way that, you know, he's my pal, and we go to as many games as we can go to. And last year, what an incredible season that was. It was one of the most incredible things that I've ever experienced in my life. And my son and I, we'd go down to Mission Valley, we'd park the car, we'd go jump on the trolley, and we'd go into the stadium, and the trolley ride, all of it was just special to me, you know. And we go down and see the game, and then I have a special friend who's part of the Padres. He vice president of the Padres, and his name is Bill. And man, that guy probably tell you a little more about him, but he's touched my family in such a special way that when there's something that's happening down there and I'm unable to get tickets, and I try not to bother him, but when I'm unable to get tickets, I call him up, and it can be a last moment thing, but you know, it doesn't bother him, and we're able to sit sometimes right behind home plate or down on field level. And last year we had the opportunity to go down on the field, the last game of the season, when we played the Colorado Rockies before the game. And my son was able to take pictures with Tony Gwynn and Ruben Rivera and all the players. And I was taking pictures, and the first picture that I wanted to take was a picture of Bill with my son. You know, I mean, I really love this man. He's a special man. He's always been an influence ever since I've met him. But I wanted to take this picture, so I said, come on, Bill, can I take a picture with you and Curtis? And when I get my camera ready, Ruben Rivera is jumping up, you know, like he's trying to get in the picture. And I'm like, what? Well, get in. And he jumped in, and as I'm taking these pictures, and then Tony got into it, and Archie Simfalco, and I, you know, I'm taking these pictures, and after it was done, and was able to see watch the game, I went and I got these pictures developed. And when I got the pictures developed, something real special hit me. And what hit me was that this was the very first time in my life that something that I was so incredibly excited about, and something, this was the first time in my whole entire life that I was on this side of the camera, and it wasn't even a thought to get on the other side. It was just my son and the players, and I was just so happy, and I was saying, wow, you know, I didn't take pictures with anybody, and I was so proud of that. You know, I was able to get out of self. And so we did all that, and we went to every one of the playoff games. Oh, what a rocking time we had, you know. And everyone except one, which was the Atlanta Braves game, and we were down at the stadium trying to find a scalper, and I didn't want to bother Bill, because playoff, as we were like, I know he has family, so I'm down there, and people are offering us tickets at $150, and I love the Padres, but not that much, you know. coming up to this, what happened, and the reason why I'm telling you this story is that's the kind of fans that we were, or we watch them when, you know, I mean, when they're away, you know, we're serious about the Padres. And so I got these four tickets to go to the game tonight. And I had forgotten about that. And I was at a meeting, and I was talking to Gary, and Gary says, hey, what are you doing Friday night? And I looked at him, because whenever someone says something like that to you, you know what I mean? If you've been around for a while, it's like, uh-oh, either I'm going to make coffee or clean ashtrays. But anyway, he asked me, would I be the speaker here? And immediately I looked at him, and that nervousness came up, because this is the Easy Does It speakers meeting. And I've been here before, and I remember a long, long time ago when this was down on University Avenue, I used to come to the meeting all the time when I was doing my little first dance with Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I was doing that, there were so many wonderful speakers, the Barney M's, the John H., and the Ted's, and it was just unbelievable, Ken D., and you know, they would all grab me in one way or another. And I remember I got a 9-month token there at a meeting, and the speaker, I stood up and I said my little deal, or a 90-day token rather, and I said my little deal, and then the speaker, it was Ken D., and he stood up and he started sharing, and he was going into this thing, and he said, oh, and congratulations, Larry, on your, and I said, wow, 90-day, he remembered my name, and he's the speaker, you know, and oh, man, you know, the little things that happen that just pull you along, you know, and so when he said this, I said, sure, you know, I'll do that, you know, and it'll give me an opportunity. And please believe me when I tell you that this is an opportunity and God has bestowed upon me the blessing to be able to come here and say thank you for what I have today, because this meeting was a very, very serious part of that. So I'm on my way home and I'm saying, well, I'm speaking to God. They have a lot of people there sometimes, though. Man, this is, oh man, I don't know if I can handle this. And as I'm going along thinking this, though, then I said, oh man, the Padres are in town. They're going to celebrate Tony Gwynn's 3,000 hit. And, oh man, I got to get out of this one. And then I said, well, all right, I'm going to need somebody to co-sign this. So I need somebody to be able to call someone who will say, man, just call him up and cancel. And every time I call someone, I say, hey, you know, here's the deal. And I've been around to know what is real and what's not. Hey, listen, check this out. Now, you know Tony Gwynn, man, 3,000 hits. And, man, my son is so excited, and we're going to go down to the ballpark. But you know what? This guy asked me to speak, and they said, oh, Larry, just call him up. And I said, right on. I said, yeah, that's all I have to do is call him up. And they said, you know what, Larry? All you have to do is call them, because you know it's not really important that Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed you to go to those places. It's really not important that you wouldn't have anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like, yeah, well, screw you. And I'm thinking, yeah. But, you know, that's the fact. That is the fact. So I had this wonderful plan. And what I was going to do is that my son and I and his friend, we were going to go down to the stadium, and I was going to bring a friend along, and then I was going to leave and, you know, I was just going to see the ceremony, and then I was going to leave, and I was going to come over here, and then he could catch the trolley or whatever. My friend, whoever was there, could bring him home, and all would be well, because I can plan things, you know. And Raphael and I was talking, and by the way, Raphael, I mentioned your name one time, that's $10. So I said, I had these plans, and Raphael was saying, okay, well, what we could do, I could pick you up at the stadium, and we could do, and I'm like, yeah, you know, and I'm thinking about this stuff, and then next thing you know, today I'm calling home, and I made arrangements to give away my two tickets, and my son is happy. He went to the game with his uncle, and I'm telling you, when I was driving down the freeway, because this is what I'm supposed to be doing, but when I'm driving down the freeway, I don't know if you understand it, but this was emotional for me, you know. I'm driving down the freeway, and as I'm driving down the freeway, I'm looking over at the stadium. I'm seeing the trolley drive up, you know, and the trolley never was important to me before, but now I'm seeing this trolley, and I'm saying, look at all those people. I should be there. And I was like, yeah, but you wouldn't have anything if it wasn't for it. And plus, it gives my son an opportunity to bond with his uncle that I think is very important, you know. And so as a result of that, I get to come here, and I look out, and I see a lot of people that I know and that I love, people who, like I said, was way before me, who watched me go through my little deal here and the little dance, the in-and-out dance is what I called it. And Harriet used to laugh at me, and she said, that's okay, keep coming back. And, you know, but So I'm here, and he's there, and it's a very good thing, because when I got home and I was trying on, I felt it was really important to dress up in a suit, because I remember Ted Howell used to tell me when I go get a token or something like that, he used to say, I said, well, how do I dress? And he says, how would you dress if you went to a funeral? I said, why do you say that? He said, well, how would you dress if you went to a funeral? I said, well, I'd probably put on a a tie or something. He says, well, if someone was dying, then you would put on a tie. So if someone is living and this is what happens here, people learn to live, then shouldn't you do the same thing? So I said, all right, so now I'm at home and I'm trying on these suits that I haven't worn in a long time. And they just don't feel the same, if you know what I mean. You know, it's just, I couldn't believe it. I'm trying to, this was going to work. And so as a result, I'm pretty comfortable now. I just some pants that I got a couple of months ago, and so I feel good. And you know, it's really unbelievable, because when I came up here, I was starting to feel this, these nerves come up, you know. And then as I watched Mike come up here and share about growing up here in San Diego, you know, I started to get a little more at ease. And then my friends start coming in. And then I said, you know what, this is just a little thing that we do all the time. We go to coffee together, we sit down, and a lot of people that I just mentioned that I was speaking to, they show up. But I got one problem that came up, that Raphael, this is $20. Raphael gave me a call and he says, listen, we're on our way, and I'll see you there, but we're stopping. We have to find some tomatoes. And I said, tomatoes? What are you talking about? He says, well, if you tell some lies or whatever, we'll have tomatoes to throw at you. And I, you know, I said, ha, 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 that's pretty good, you know. And then I come in and I looked at Harriet and I said, what the hell is this? She has a bag. She has a bag of tomatoes, you know, and I'm saying, what kind of stuff is this? Is this? I said, easy does a speaker's meeting have come a long way when you get tough enough to throw at the speaker. And then I looked over here on this table and I said, well, they got a few for me to throw back. So I'll be just fine, you know. So I'm really happy to be here. Like I said, I grew up in San Diego, and I've done a lot of things here, running around the streets of trying to be somebody and not knowing who I was and trying to be like you or act like you. I grew up trying to be a baseball player. I wanted to be a police officer, and I wanted to be a cowboy, so I was always confused. And so when I was growing up, I come from a family of, and I say this, and before, I guess I need to tell you, though, and something that's very important to me, is that I want you to know that no matter what is said, that I need to say to you that I love my family. Every member of my family I love. And there were some tough times that my mother and my father went through. Sometimes when I was younger, I didn't appreciate very much. In fact, a lot of the things that happened in my family, I was very, very much ashamed of, to where I didn't want to be around my house. But at the same time, now when I look back, I realize from looking at myself and the things that I've done that my mother and father did the very best they could for me. And I know that without them, I wouldn't be here today. Good or bad, I would not be here today. And so I love them very much. So if I say something that may get you to think that I had a bad parent in any way, I did not. They did pretty well by me, because we came apart. We didn't have very much. I graduated from elementary school, and the way I graduated, I was in this play, and this play that I was in, I stood there, and I had this little role in this play, and I stood there before everybody as they were taking pictures in a diamond green, it was green, dark green and light green diamond shirt, and it had bobby pins holding it together. It belonged to my brother, and I had a pair of purple pants, and purple and green really didn't go together, but I had that, and I had holes in my socks because we came apart, and as everybody was taking pictures, I just knew they were just taking them so they could show everybody how bad I looked. It was all about me. And then what happened when that was all over with, I was so embarrassed, but, you know, I just had to be cool. So I went up to my girlfriend, and as much as I knew about girlfriends, I was in the sixth grade. But I went up to her because we had these little books that people would sign. They were autographs, you know. I mean, that, you know, promotion when you was, you know, went to another. She signed these little things like roses are red or violets are blue, and that's what she gave me. And they said, and I just needed someone to just touch me and make me feel good. And her said, roses are red and violets are blue. Birds are skinny, and so are you. I'm on the right track now. I just knew. So what happened was that I was very disappointed, and I found that what happened is all my life I was just disappointed in people because people didn't know how to treat me. People didn't understand that I needed love. I needed care, you know. I was delicate. And so then I was playing Little League Baseball, and I was on this baseball team, and I made the All-Star team. And I was so proud. It was the first year that we got to wear these brand new powdered blue uniform. They were white with powder blue trim, and it had gold star, and it had SE for Southeastern, you know. And I got my number 4, and I was on the team, and I knew I could play, and I was going to be the second baseman, and everybody was going to be able to come out and clap for me when they announced my name. And so what happened was this coach who came in, and he was going to, this guy came in to help the coach, and he used to play in the majors, so everybody was in awe of him. You know, he had a cup of coffee in the majors. But anyway, he came up, and he felt that it was really important to have a left-hand batter in the lineup. But the left-hand batter played the same position I played, and I wasn't it. I wasn't left-handed. And I didn't understand why we needed it. You know, we're little league. We're not the majors where you got it. So we were told that this was going to happen, that this guy was going to bat second in my spot, I was quite angry. And, you know, growing up, like I said, we came up very hard. My family had always used those four-letter words. You know, and I thought that was a way of standing up for yourself. So I said, who the F do you think you are? I play second base, and you're not even our coach. As everybody sat around, and everybody looked at me like, wow, you know. I was big time. And so the coach told me to be quiet, which I didn't appreciate. But he told me to be quiet, and we continued on practicing, and then we got to the first game. And I didn't play. Then we got to the second game. And we beat this team called Encano 25-0. And we went on to play out in Lemon Grove here, and we at this little league field they got right up here off of Canton up here, and we played another game. And then we lost our fourth game, and we were out of it. And in all those games, there was only one kid who never, ever got to play, and that was me. And that was the most painful thing as a youngster that I ever experienced in my life, because everybody was there watching. And I knew that everybody knew that I didn't get to play. And I remember crying and feeling that shame and that, oh, it was just hard to take. And I remember that I knew then that no matter what, no matter who you were, I knew you didn't give a shit about me and I didn't give a shit about you. And it would be okay because now I'm going to get what I need. And I commenced to doing things that I didn't care. I didn't know how to care. I didn't have no role model or anything like that to teach me how to care and to tell me that bad things happen to good people. No one ever told me that. And I couldn't understand how a human being could do something like that to me. 25-0. I'd have to be really something to cause us to lose. 25-0. And so that's the way. So I grew up with, I guess now we call them resentments, huh? So I had a serious resentment. So I'm growing up, and I decided that I was going to go off into this world doing my thing. And I became a little hood. You know, I started stealing things. And but I always wanted to protect my little sister, who was about 5 years younger than me. She would, my mother would send her to the store, and she'd spend the money on candy, and I'd have to go out and steal bottles to get what my mother wanted so she wouldn't get a whooping, and I'd try to care for her, and I remember that I saw my mother straightening her hair with this hot curling iron or whatever you call them, and I remember one day her hair wasn't combed, so I was going to do it for her. And I put that comb on the fire just like my mother had, and when I put it to her hair, it turned into paper, and I was like, wow, you know, and I burned her hair out. And I said, that's okay, your hair must have been dirty, and I sent her off to school, you know. And I could really think back then. I went on to high school, and I started, if I made a C, I was doing really well. A D was the only important thing because I wanted to play baseball, and I knew that if I learned how to play baseball that I could take my family out of it, you know, and that during this time, though, someone had mentioned something to me along the line about this thing they call God. So I started going to this Catholic school because I wanted to become a Catholic, and I wanted to learn about God, and I thought maybe I could bring him into my neighborhood and take him to my house because it was just, really, it was bad, you know. I mean, and when I say bad, I mean it's just that I really wish it had been more, not for just me, but for the family members, you know. And my father had long disappeared. I didn't know where he was, and I found out that he was in jail and had been in jail for a long time, and a lot of people knew about it, so I got teased about that a lot, and we call it capping on each other, you know. And so anyway, so that passed, and I went on to I went to this thing to try to bring God to my house as a young kid, and I just didn't see it working. And I remember I went into this it wasn't the actual church, it's where the priest stayed or whatever, and we would go in there and study, you know, I guess catechism or whatever, we studied, and I remember I saw this this white cross. And I knew if I could get that cross and get it to my house, that God would visit. So I stole that cross. I stole it. I went to there and I looked, and nobody was looking. I took it home. I was so proud. I said, "Mom, look what the priest gave me. The priest gave me this, Mom. He gave it to me because he says I'm really doing good." And my mother hung it right above the door. And I said, "Oh, man, things are going to change." But things didn't change. And one time shortly thereafter, I got real sick. And I was laying up in the bed. And when I was laying up in the bed, the priest brought the other kids that was studying with me, brought them to my house. I was laying in the bed sick. And all of a sudden, my mother said, "You have visitors." And I said, "Visitors?" And I looked, and there was the priest with these kids, and I was like, "Oh no, they're going to see the cross." I don't think that he even paid attention to it, you know, but anyway, it was shortly thereafter that I just realized that God didn't come to Southeast San Diego. I think he was too busy. And a lot of things were happening, and I started getting this little thing called anger, and then I got into high school, and then I found it. And she was 2 years younger than me. And she was fast, and she came up and she told me she liked me, and I liked her, and I was off and running, and nothing else mattered but her. And I turned 19 April the 12th, and she turned 17 April the 6th, and we got married April the 27th, and my son came along that same year in September. And I didn't know how to be a man. I didn't know how to be a father. I didn't know how to be a husband. I didn't know how to do nothing. But I knew that it was important that I took care of my kids, and I did not abandon my kids like I had been abandoned. So I tried to do that dance, and I didn't know how. And it was shortly thereafter, as I'm working at this company called Standard Oil, because I was always able to get a job, because I started working at about 15 years old. So I got this job, and I'm working, I got a friend of mine. His name was Robert Deere. Mine's Larry Dixon, and I was born April 12th. He was April 14th, and he came to my house one morning, and everybody was laughing because he got these papers that said greetings, and he was drafted. And I was sitting there on the rail, and I was laughing at him. He said, "Man, you're going into the army," and all of a sudden, the postman came around the corner, and he's looking at me, and I said, "No, you don't." He said, "Yes, I do." And he handed me this envelope, and it too said greetings. And I had started drinking then, and like I said, I got married, and I had a family, and I didn't know how to pay bills. I didn't know how to take care of the family. I just knew that it was important that I continue to play basketball and hang out with my friends. So what happened was that I went down there to the draft board because I was going to tell them off. I was going to tell them, "You know what, you can't touch me because I'm married and I have a kid. You can't touch me. You understand that? You don't know who I am." And I went down there and told them, and they said, "You're right. It's no problem. What we'll do is we'll reclassify you, and everything will be okay." And when they said that, that hurt my feelings. They didn't want me. And I said, I got this moment of clarity. I said, "Wait a minute, can I think about it?" And the lady looked at me and said, "Think about what?" And I said, "Well, I might decide to go in." She says, "Well, what'd you come down here for?" I said, "That's none of your business. I'll be back." And I went, and I got this moment of clarity. And the moment of clarity was that I wasn't much of anything. And I remember it was always saying, "We will make a man out of you. See the world." And I said, "You know, I need somebody to do that." And I knew that no matter what, if in fact I went into the service, what could happen is that my wife would get money. She'd get this, you know, this allotment or whatever. And if something happened to me, she'd get a lump sum. We had medical benefits then. So I went down there and I told everybody, "You know what, man, they won't let me out of this deal. Man, I can't believe that." And I signed on the dotted line to go in. So I went into the service and left my family. And when I went into the service, I went through basic training at Fort Ordon. Then I went to Fort Gordon, Georgia as a radio teletype operator. They gave me a choice between infantry and radio teletype. So anyway, that was a real hard choice. So I went to Fort Gordon, Georgia, and next thing you know, they said, "Hey, Larry, you will be arriving in Vietnam in November of this year." And I said, "Wait a minute. Well, something's wrong here." I said, "You don't understand. I had a choice. I could have stayed out. I didn't have to be here. And I don't need to go." You know how well they listen. So the next thing you know, I'm in Vietnam. And I tell you, one of the great things about this book, this book of Alcoholics Anonymous, is a key portion in there for a man like me. And it's, I mean, a key part in there. And what it says is that there are some wrongs we can never fully right. But we won't worry about them if we could honestly say to ourselves that we would write them if we could. There was a lot of things that happened in Vietnam that I wish I could change, but I can't. I seen a lot of things that I didn't want to watch on TV. I was so scared a lot of times, but I had to act as if. I had to go out there and be rough and tough because I was not a big man, but I could talk pretty good. And I was, man, I went crazy over there. I didn't think I was ever coming back. And a lot of things happened, and so I made it back, of course. And I grew up over in Vietnam, and my whole life changed. And I had swore that I would never, ever, I was drinking. And you know, we all have stories, and I'm trying to get through this deal because I think it's more important that I explain to you how good Alcoholics Anonymous had been for me. But what happened was that I had gone over there, and I had been drinking a lot. I always drank. And when I got to Vietnam, one of the things that had happened is I swore, because I've seen a lot of people sniffing glue and a lot of people getting messed up behind drugs. I swore I never, ever would do drugs. Never. But when I hit Vietnam, whatever you had, I wanted anything to take me out of this deal. So when I came back, I became a drug dealer. I became a drug dealer because I wanted to be hip, slick, and cool, and I wanted to get my wife back because she was hanging out, and you know, I wanted to show her that I was tough. And I didn't ever want you to call me an alcoholic. I didn't want you ever to say that I had a drinking problem because that was my mother and father. And I don't say, you can call me a drug addict, that's cool because that's tough, you know, but don't call me an alcoholic. And so when I look back at it, you know, the number of things that I forgot as far as when I was drinking, you know, they say more will be revealed. And the number of times that I wrecked my car. Remember, I was driving down this street, Federal Boulevard, and I was driving down the street. I had a case of beer in my car because I was going to gamble, and I wanted my own stash, you know, and I didn't want anybody charging me for beers because when we gamble, we charge $1 for beer, and I didn't want that to happen. So I had my case, and I'm driving down the street, and I'm drinking, and I'm going across Federal Boulevard, and I'm going, and right there on Federal and Euclid, my car, the wheel came off. I'm driving, you know, an alcoholic car, so I'm driving down the street, and all of a sudden the wheel came off, and when the wheel came off, it threw me across the street all the way, and I was so lucky there was not another car coming. But all I could think of was getting my beer and heading for home, and I left the car there. Never went back to get it. I don't know what they thought. I got some notices that I didn't respond to. I don't know what happened to that car. And then shortly thereafter, I had a little 62 Chevy that I left on 163. It stopped. I got out, got my liquor, my beer, and I was gone. And I don't know who has those cars now. Every now and then I drive down the road, I said, could that be my, nah, you know. So anyway, I did this deal, and then I got busted a couple of times for drug sales and things like that. And so I went and got this job with Coca-Cola Bottling Company of San Diego, and my life began to change somewhat because I knew I was a single parent because I went and got my son. And so I was growing up a little bit, but I was doing the do with drugs and alcohol and stuff like that. And so anyway, as I started moving up in this company called Coca-Cola, and I became pretty big in this company. I was working out of public affairs, and what I was doing is I was working with organizations like Special Olympics, March of Dimes, Cystic Fibrosis. I was doing all those things, and they would come to me, and we would talk, and I would decide how much money our company would put into their program through sponsorship. I was blessed with being able to work with a lot of movie stars as spokespeople. I mean, they were working with as spokespersons for the March of Dimes, and my job was to try to secure some of them, work with them, take them to all the various schools in the county, and get support of the Walk America that occurred. And I was doing this, and then I started doing big things with big people that we see on TV, and people just knew Larry, you know, they really knew me. And I was able, if you wanted to go to a Super Bowl, you give me a call, I'll get you tickets. If you wanted to go to a concert and you wanted backstage passes, I could do that. But I never could stay my right size. I was always living this way during the day and that way at night. And I just couldn't bring them together. And one of the things that was true, and that was always a fact for me, is that I could tell you what your shoes look like, but I never knew what your eyes looked like, because inside I was just worth so much less. So it started getting out of hand, and I wouldn't go to work, and I wouldn't call them. And they would say, Larry, listen, are you okay? Listen, all you have to do is call us. When you can't make it to work, just call us. And I said, all right, I'll do that. And then the next time they said, Larry, we asked you to call. And if you don't do it again, we're writing you up. And I said, all right. And then Mr. Larry, we're writing you up. But if you, all you have to do is call. You don't even have to give us a reason. Just call. And I said, damn. They said, Larry, if you do it again, we'll have to suspend you without pay. And when they were suspending me without pay, they told me that I would lose my job. And then I found that I had gotten divorced and gotten another wife and had more kids. And during this time, my son was an athlete. He was boxing, and he was representing the United States against different countries, you know, Russia and these countries. And I would tell you about it, and you would show up to see it, but I couldn't because I was drinking and drugging. And my son, they would come and say, man, what happened to you? And I'd come up with this big lie. And they would say, God, your son got out of the ring. And he said, where's my dad? Anybody seen my dad? And I was abandoning my kids just like I felt that I was abandoned. My father died in 1986, you know, and he had to the Pioneers. And I said, what the hell is he doing? I said, Dad, where are you going? He said, I'm going to a meeting. I said, what kind of meeting? I was seeing people like you walk. I said, Dad, what are you doing? He says, I'm going to a meeting. I said, oh, okay. I thought he was going to play bingo or something. So I said, well, what time do you want me to pick you up? And he says, no, that's okay. I'll get a ride home. I said, you don't want me to pick you up? What's going on? He says, Larry, I'll get a ride. I said, but from who, Dad? And he says, someone to give me a ride. And I couldn't understand that. And I remember as I was driving off, I was peeking in the window trying to see who you were. And should I leave my dad? And then I said, well, hell, I'll call him tomorrow. Hope he's okay. I don't trust those people. And so anyway, he told me he was going to AA. And I was thinking, oh, my God, my father, another thing to be ashamed of. And then when I fell off, it came to a point, and I'll tell you how it happened. Oh, I'm getting close, huh? I'll tell you what happened, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but it was sort of like this. I started to realize that I couldn't drink. I mean, I could not quit drinking. I really couldn't, even though I tried. So it was like there was this cat strolling down this alley, and he was in heat. And he hadn't had any relationships, I guess that's a nice way of putting it, with another cat for a while. So he was meowing, and he was really in need. And he's looking up and down the alley, and there was no other cat available, but there was a skunk walking down the alley. So he looked around and he said, well, nobody will know. So he ran over there and he jumped on that skunk and he started having himself a good time. Well, the skunk got into it as well. And the skunk lifted his tail, and when it lifted the tail, the skunk hit that cat so strong that that cat jumped off that skunk and went running down the alley. I mean, it hurt him bad. Well, you see, he didn't get all he wanted, but he got all he could stand. And that's what happened to me. And I found myself getting all I could stand because I'm telling you, I went down to this little motel room where I locked myself up on a Wednesday, and I decided that I was going to commit suicide. I took all the alcohol I could get, and I took some cocaine, and I thought that mix would do it. And I was there from Wednesday to Sunday, and it didn't work. I had written $1,400 worth of bad checks on the company that I worked for, and it didn't work. And I woke up with just me, and I had to face the world. And when I went back, my company said, Larry, what's the matter? And I told them, I have a problem. And they said, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going into the hospital. And this guy that I was telling you about, his name was Bill Adams, he said, Larry, you go into the hospital, you will not miss a paycheck. We just want you to come back and bring the old Larry. And I went into this hospital, and I arrived because she was as sick as me, and you needed me. And I went through that deal, and I was never, ever going to drink a drug again. And then I came out, and I started drinking probably about a month later, and then I started coming to the Easy Does It speakers meeting, and I started going to Old Town speakers meeting, and we go out and we have good times after that. And then, but I just knew that there would come a day when you come up to me and say, okay, hey, Larry, you know, we forgot to tell you. Let me tell you how much the dues are. Because this wasn't real. And you couldn't tell me that someone could stand up and say, hey, I've been clean and sober for 15 years without a drink. Not even a Miller Lite. So I didn't believe you, but I was hanging out because I was having fun. But then I kept relapsing. I kept coming here saying, hi, my name's Larry, I'm a newcomer. And I got sick of it, so I didn't want to be around you. I was so much ashamed. And then this guy came up and he says, hey, screw it, Holmes. It's all about you, man. Get your life together. So I started trying it again. And then I ran into a sponsor who said, I came back on November 22nd or 21st, and I'll tell you how this happened. I had gotten drunk again, and when I got drunk, I didn't want to ever do drugs again, and I found myself in this house with these people that I didn't know. And I was doing drugs, and I couldn't understand it. I had money, and I'm doing this drugs, and I said, wow. And then all of a sudden, this pain came over me, and it was a pain that I never could... I've been a lot of places. I know what pain is, but I felt this unbelievable pain. I couldn't lay down. I couldn't sit this way. It just wasn't working. I was just in this pain. And then all of a sudden, I start hearing something saying, some of us have to die for others to live. And I said, oh, shit. I have to die for you to live, because a lot of people knew me, and I just knew I was checking out, because I couldn't use the bathroom, and I couldn't eat. I knew my body was shutting down. And this is the first time that I ever left a place like that with money in my pocket, because I always went home broke. And so when I went home, I wanted to just say goodbye to my family in the way that was necessary. You guys had told me and showed me by the things that have happened in my life that there was in fact a God. There was no doubt about it, and he did come to my neighborhood. So I wanted to say goodbye to my wife and my kids. And anyway, I was in the room, and after I did that, they just looked at, you know, that look we get when somebody loves us, and they're just like, not that they're mad at you, they're just like, you know, that why look, you know. So I felt that, and I went in the bedroom, and I just laid down, and I remember feeling this pain, and I said, God, I know I'm coming, and when I get there, please, God, judge me by my intentions and not my actions. And I went to sleep. And I woke up, and when I woke up, I had two burning desires, man, and it was unbelievable. I needed to use the bathroom real bad, and I was hungry. I needed something to eat, and I couldn't figure out, and I'm going insane, and I'm trying to figure out which way to go, and my son comes in. Well, before he came in, I felt the pain was gone. It was gone, and I started beating myself trying to find that pain because it scared me that this pain was gone. And all of a sudden, my son came in, and he said, Dad, what are you doing? And I said, Curtis, go outside for a minute. I'll be with you in a minute. And he walked outside, and when he walked outside, I fell to my knees. And I knew for the first time in my whole entire life that I was done. I knew that I didn't need any more alcohol ever again, and I didn't want it. I knew I didn't have to touch a drug again. I knew that I was going to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was going to tell you I did this deal and not care. For the first time in my life, it wasn't about ego. And I surrendered because I knew there was a God in my life. And I came back and I got serious. And I went to this girl took me around the meetings and said she'd save a seat for me for 15 minutes. And if I arrived, I'd be there. Her name was Linda. And she used to curse people out who would come up to me and say, well, how was it out there? And she'd curse them out and I'd say, hey, you don't have to protect me. And she said, shut up. Because you know you didn't like that. And here it is. You're afraid to tell them to leave you alone. So I'll do it for you until you can learn to do it yourself. And then one time, this guy came up to me, and he called me at a bad moment. And I told him to go F himself. And she said, yes! And I'm like, what the hell? And so she took me to a meeting, and she introduced me to this guy by the name of Ben. And she said, now you need to talk to him. I said, oh, man, you know. So I went and I talked to this guy, and I said, hey, man, listen, I've been having problems. I've been around here for a long time, and I know you, and I know your wife. I was wondering if maybe you could help me with the steps. And he says, okay, after the meeting, we'll go to my house. And I was thinking, not now. But we went to his house, and when we went to the house, I remember he said, look, there's one thing I'll ask of you, and you must go to a men's meeting. I said, a men's meeting? For what? He said, look, this is where I go, and this is important. And I said, oh, man. And he says, when is your date? And I told him, and he said, oh, man, that's awesome. And I said, what? He said, 112288. Oh, man, I'm following him around like, what? What's so special about that? He says, 1-1, that's November, 2-2, the 22nd, 8-8, that's awesome. I said, all right, thanks. I'm thinking, what the hell's wrong with this guy? But you know what? Every time I sign a card or anything, I put on it 112288. Because you see, you can take my jacket, you can take my car, and many people have, and you can take a lot of things that I have, but one thing that you cannot take from me is 112288. That's my sobriety date, and that's when God says, now it's time for you to show up. Because I feel that at that moment, God came down, and it was time for the judgment, and he said, not guilty by reason of insanity. But from this point on, you are responsible. And don't make me have to talk to you again. I've been an Alcoholic Anonymous, and what has happened this year has been the best of years for me, and it's been the worst. I lost my brother on March the 10th. He was only 16 months older than me, and I wasn't ready for that. I didn't want to lose my brother. I didn't want him to go. I did not give him permission to leave me or my family or his family, but he did. I was beat up, broke down. I lived right over here. I've been living there for 7 years, paying bills, and this is just this year. And what happened was the day after I buried my brother, the landlord came and gave us a 30-day notice telling me I had to get out of that house. I have a son going to Helix High School. I got a baby girl that's 3 years old that is so beautiful who was born on my natal birthday. We share that together. That was a God thing because I'm too old to have kids. And here it is. I'm going through this deal. I don't like it. I'm not happy, and now I'm getting kicked out. And I know that my credit has been so messed up for the life of me that I'll never be able to get anything. And then with that guy who said, greetings, Uncle Sam, said, oh, by the way, you've been good to us, we will be good to you, and you are upset. And you can buy a house. And now I'm living in a house that's 4 bedrooms, 3 baths. It's a beautiful house. And people come over, and I'm happy to see them. And my house is beautiful. And I got friends here who came out tonight to support me, who helped me move out of this house and into that house to keep me out of self. Guy rented a truck and would not let me pay. My wife is blown away. She's wondering, what the hell? They don't want anything? People come over to my house looking like Jehovah's Witnesses. Not that I have anything against them. Come over to my house like Jehovah's Witnesses to visit Larry Dixon. I got people that touch me in such a way. And I'll tell you, I know that I'm getting long, and I'm going to have to bring it to... So let me tell you some... I got two stories that I must share with you that is very important to me. I have a son that I used to take to all these meetings. And when I take him to the meetings, we go to noon at the Grove. And I say, Curtis, come on, we got to get there. We're running late. And he said, okay, Dad, okay. And he's nervous. I'm scaring him. And we're driving down the street. And he said, Dad, I haven't had lunch. And I said, oh, my God. Okay, let's go to McDonald's. I'll get you a Happy Meal. He says, all right, I want chicken McNuggets, and I want a sweet and sour sauce. I said, all right, Curtis, we go in there. I'm scaring this woman. I'm saying, ma'am, hurry, hurry. I need chicken McNuggets with the Happy Meal. With a Happy Meal, chicken McNuggets, and sweet and sour sauce. She says, okay, okay. So we get to noon at the Grove, and my son is sitting there, and as he's opening his Happy Meal, he's just a-rocking. I said, that's my boy. And he gave me this look, and I said, what, Curtis? Now what's wrong? He said, you forgot the sweet and sour sauce. I said, well, go into the kitchen and get some ketchup. And he said, but, Dad, you forgot. I said, you expect me to get up from here and go get some sweet and sour sauce? He said, well, you forgot. And I don't know how it happened, but the next thing you know, I'm driving down the street, Broadway here, on my way to the McDonald's. And I got him his sweet and sour, and I come back, and he's just rocking, enjoying it, and I'm saying, that's my boy. So he's having fun. I knew something was really wrong with that picture, but it worked out. And so I said, you know, that's my son. What I'm going to do after this meeting, I'm going to take him back down to McDonald's because he deserves to be able to play on the swings, on the things there. So I took him back a real part. So I take him to the park over here, and I'm pushing him on the swings, and he's having a good time. But, you know, when you're kind of fresh in recovery, you get tired quick and bored. So I was getting tired, so I said, hey, Kurt, load him up. Let's go. He says, okay. He jumps in the car. Now, my son, whenever it's hot, he starts doing this, oh, man. And I said, what? What's the matter? He said, Dad, it's hot. And I said, what do you think we ought to do about it? He said, Dad, I think it's Slurpee time. I said, all right. So we pull in, we get a Slurpee. He loves Slurpees. So on this day, I'm going to stop at a 7-Eleven. I'm going to surprise him with a Slurpee. And we're driving up the hill on Fairmont Avenue. And as we're driving up the hill on Fairmont Avenue, the 7-Eleven's coming up. And I'm going to drive in there and say, hey, Kurt, wow. He said, what, Dad? I said, I think it's Slurpee time. And as we're driving up the hill, I look at him and said, what, Curtis? He said, Dad, where are we going? I said, we're going home. He says, oh, man. I said, what's the matter? He said, Dad, I'm bored. And when he said he was bored, I got pissed. Now, I didn't say this out loud, but I'm thinking, you little son of a, you know what? Let me tell you something. I went back and got your sweet and sour sauce. I took you back down there to play. Then I took you to, I'm the one. Then I said, you know what? He just missed out on a Slurpee. I'm going to bypass this. I want to tell him so bad, you missed out on a Slurpee, but I didn't. I drove right past the 7-Eleven. I get to my house, and he bounces up the stairs like nothing's wrong. And I'm thinking, God, I got to tell him he missed out on a Slurpee. But I said, no, don't do it. So I go into the bedroom, and I said, God, he's having too much fun. And then I said, man, you know what? I love him very much. I really do. I love my son. But because he didn't show any gratitude for the things that I had been doing, he missed out on a Slurpee. And I said, wow, I wonder if sometimes when I complain about my state of affairs and the kind of car that I drive, or not making enough on my job, or not liking where I live, I wonder if God looks down at me and says, hey, Larry, screw you, you miss out on Slurpee. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and you have blessed me with many, many Slurpees. There's so much I'd like to share with you because you have helped me to attain so much. A house, I had 3 cars, I've helped people. People come to me and they ask for my help. And while they're asking me for my help, they're helping me. They have touched me. And so I got one other thing to say, and I'm really sorry. I hope you don't mind and throw those tomatoes at me. But I came home one day, and when I came home, pardon me? I'm okay? You want me to hurry, Harriet? Okay. I know, I got it. Pardon me? Okay, but Harriet, see, okay. I love you, Harriet. So listen, what happened was I came home one day and I was doing that thing. You know, I had gone through that God, I offered myself to thee thing, but it wasn't working on this particular day. And I was feeling real bad. And I usually don't go home right after work during the day because I still got some things that I'm trying to work on as far as this guilt thing that I have about being the man that I was. But I go home one day and I'm watching the Discovery Channel and they're talking about elephants. And there's a herd of elephants that's walking along, and I'm saying, wow, look at that, you know. And they're talking about how strong a herd of elephants are. And they said that when this lion came up, and it showed that when the lion started to approach the herd of elephants, because they had young elephants with them, baby elephants, that they formed a circle. And they put their butts up against one another, and the young elephants got in the center of the circle. Now, nobody messes with a herd of elephants. They don't mess with one elephant except man, because you know how we get. But no one messes with a herd of elephants, so the lion would look at him like, yeah, well, I got something better to do. So what happened, I was thinking, wow, that's really cool. And then the guy says, however, there are times when the young elephants, they get curious and they get bored and they want to go out and they look for some excitement. And it showed this baby elephant running away from the herd. And he was leaving the herd, and I was like, where is he going? And I'm watching this, and you can tell by the way I'm talking that I'm into this story. So I'm watching this deal, and they're watching the elephant, I mean, showing the elephant run away from the herd. And then all of a sudden, it panned ahead, and there was about 5 lions. They were big lions, but they were young, and they were just kicking back, enjoying the sun. Well, the elephant spotted them and said, hey, fellas, how you doing? And he ran right up to the lions. And when he did that, those lions jumped up and they jumped on the elephant. And I'm thinking, oh man, come on elephant, get away, you know. And the lions are on him and the elephant now is trying to get away and he knows he's in for a bad day. And then he tripped and fell. And the lions started trying to make the kill. And the narrator said, you know, they cannot make the kill. They're too young. They don't know how to make this kill. This will be a feast for bigger lions. However, these young lions cannot make the kill. And I'm thinking, get up, elephant, get up. And finally, the lions just got bored, and they just looked at each other, and they got up and walked away. And as they walked away, I was saying, come on, elephant, get up. I said, get up, elephant. And the elephant jumped up, and he shook his head. And I know he was saying, damn, you know. And he shook his head. And he turned around and he ran back to the herd. And the man said, this time the elephant was lucky. He was able to make it back to the herd to safety. And I said, you know, that was me, that young elephant. I was always going out there to have a little bit of fun. I was curious. I wanted a little bit of excitement. I didn't mean to hurt my family. I didn't mean to hurt anybody. I really didn't. And I kept running into young elephants. The police department said, you're going to jail. The boss says, you have to go. My wife says, you need to get out. And young elephants, but fortunately for me, I was able to make it back to you, the herd. And every time things would happen in my life that I was so painful, like when my brother died, I never knew after 10 years of sobriety that I would have to be the baby elephant in the middle of the herd. Because I want to be the strong. I want to be there for you. And this time, you were there for me. And you told me to get in the center of the herd, and I did. I started going to more meetings, and when I went there, you said, just sit there. Don't worry about anything. Do you need anything? And I was like, you don't even know me. People who didn't even know me would come up and say, man, I love you, man. My brother died too, and this is what I did. Today I'm closer to my brother and my father who passed away in 86 than I've ever been. I got my father's ring here. I got a lot of things from my brother, and I do know that they love me, and that my father, I'm sure, would be very, very proud to look down on his son, Larry Dixon, and say, Larry is a very proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's all because I took the steps that you encouraged me to take. I followed your lead. I go to meetings. I clean ashtrays. I make coffee, and I don't even drink coffee, and I don't even smoke. And I give up Padre Gay because you asked me to, and you bless me, and you say that I count. I want to tell you from the very bottom of my heart that I love you very much, and I hope that I can continue to try to pass on what you have so freely given to me. And if there's anyone here that don't understand that this is the best show on earth, we need to talk, because this is a deal. Thank you so very much. I appreciate it.